Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daniel Treisman, a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia. He's a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation, the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and is the author of two previous acclaimed books on Russia. His latest book just out is The Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Treisman.
Thank you.
And the president and the State Department have, as far as I know, have yet to congratulate Vladimir Putin, who just won the Russian election amid charges of fraud and growing protests at home. Yet at the press conference yesterday, the president mentioned that he was looking forward to meeting with Putin at Camp David during the G8 summit. Can you explain that mixed message?
I think politicians in Washington understand that they're going to have to deal with Putin over the next 6 years, or at least as long as he remains in power, that Russia is an extremely important country in world affairs. We recognize that we have to work with the leaders of countries, even those whose political systems we don't entirely approve of. So I think there's an understandable realism in the response from Washington, at the same time as a recognition that the election was not as free and fair as one would have hoped it would be.
Well, it does seem that there's been quite a backlash to Putin, both starting with the enormous demonstrations that took place after the parliamentary elections, where the phrase for United Russia's the party of thieves and swindlers became a part of the national dialogue in Russia. And there have been subsequent demonstrations. And following the presidential election, there was a tremendous police presence. So clearly, Putin, who, you know, has moved very quickly when he took over to control the media, to control the judiciary, and to control the entire country, it doesn't seem to be too popular, at least at home in Moscow.
Well, that's right, but I think we need to distinguish. There are really two Russias, or at least two Russias at this point. But first of all, there's the Russia of the modern cities, the highly educated classes, who have more than one cell phone per person, who travel abroad, who spend a good part of their time on the internet. Now, that part of Russia, or we could call that the modern Russia, has in the last year completely turned off Putin. But there's also the traditional or dependent, or one could even say paternalist, Russia out in the provinces, where people really depend on the state for financial support. Enterprises that could not keep going without subsidies and bailouts, and the armies of public employees, teachers, doctors in the provinces, who really know that they don't have great alternative workplaces if they were to lose their jobs, and who depend on the central government continuing to redistribute money to them. And in that community, there's much more of a desire for stability, even if things are not perfect, and there's a certain level of dependence and not wanting to rock the boat. So on the one hand, Putin has really lost support in the cities, but he still remains quite popular, even if it's a sort of grudging approval in the provinces.
Well, it seems, though, that there's an element now developing of the emperor has no clothes. And to some extent, Putin, like Stalin and other Russian leaders, has tried to encourage a kind of cult of personality. And apparently, he even went to the point of having some plastic surgery or some Botox, which does appear to have backfired somewhat. There's something odd about his appearance. Do you think, though, that that's the beginning of the end? Because he has created, and it's remarkable in such a short period of time how he reversed the trajectory of Russian democracy, controlled the press, controlled the judiciary, and jailed oligarchs he didn't like and basically regulated the rest of them, and has absolute power. And now he doesn't have the respect that I imagine he craves for.
That's right. We need to remember he had 8 years of really miraculous economic growth, extremely high economic growth, in large part associated with the rising oil price in the early 2000s. So 2000 to 2008, the economy was recovering very rapidly, modernizing very rapidly, and Putin was extremely popular. But now we've had 4 years of much more depressed economic conditions after the global financial crisis. And although Russia has managed to struggle through and is not doing as badly as perhaps it might have been doing, still, it's a big change from the years of boom recently. And so this has definitely pulled down Putin's approval. And there's been a real fascinating change in atmosphere during the last year or so among the elite. And it's exactly as you say, a sort of naked emperor phenomenon. I remember seeing in February of last year, so about exactly a year ago, there was a conference to recognize 80 years since former President Yeltsin's birth. And Putin came and addressed the conference and gave a short speech, which was actually extremely gracious and complimentary and well-written. Almost nobody clapped. And there was a moment, there was a sense in the hall that something fundamental had changed, that people were now not willing to give him the sort of perhaps grudging, but nevertheless respect that had been customary till then. And since then, it's just accelerated. He's widely criticized on the internet, widely criticized by Russians in the protests, but also this sense that, this, as you said, this slogan, this phrase, the party of thieves and swindlers, has really seeped into the common discourse, and I think about 50% of Russians in one poll said they recognize that phrase. So the notion that he could control the airwaves and control how people were talking, that's really gone by the board.
But when you say he doesn't have the respect that he used to have, if indeed he did, I'm astounded, though. It's taken so long, it seems to me, for people to recognize so much of what's happened in Russia that was so ugly and murderous and thug-like, how it wasn't somehow connected to Putin. He's gotten away with respect in the West. He's lost it at home, at least, brave journalists and everywhere in the blogosphere, people are recognizing what I think is pretty obvious, that Putin had a hand in blowing up the apartment buildings that was the pretext for the Second Chechen War that put him on the map. He was handled the theater takeover that ended up in a massive tragedy and an unnecessary loss of ordinary Russians' lives. Many now beginning to see that as a staged KGB event, the poisoning with polonium of a Russian dissident, and so on and so on. I mean, the record is amazing, and nobody's wanted to really basically call it like it is. So, do you think we're going to reach a point now where the Western leaders recognize they're sitting down with a thug?
Well, I think some Western leaders have that view. And he's not the only thug they sit down with if he is a thug. But I wouldn't jump to conclusions, Ian. On a lot of those cases that you mentioned, there are suspicious circumstances. The truth may be more complicated than we imagine. And, we could talk about the individual issues that you raised, but I wouldn't say that it's an established fact that the KGB blew up, or the FSB, the former KGB, blew up the apartment buildings. Clearly, the official, the preparation for the raid on the Moscow theater to free the hostages in 2002 was bungled in a really awful way, which cost many people their lives. There's a lot of things which look very ugly where people have asserted that Putin was himself personally involved. I think we need to be a little bit careful and look at the evidence and reserve judgment until there really is solid proof.
Sure, but this is a man who's absolutely in charge of a country where there's been no justice for Anna Politkovskaya and all of the events that we're talking about. In fact, we haven't even scratched the surface on a lot of them. So He can't surely get off scot-free.
No, I'm certainly not saying you should get off scot-free. I'm saying we should look at the individual cases.
Well, just in closing then, Daniel Treisman, do you think that just as Putin has lost respect to the extent in the way that there's this emperor's clothes phenomenon unleashed in Soviet, in Russia, and presumably you can't put that back in the bottle. Do you think it's going to spread internationally? I mean, just in terms of international thuggery, if you will, it's pretty brazen what's happening in Syria, that Russia supports Syria, sells arms to Syria, doesn't care about the Syrian dictator murdering his own people. It's almost become a proxy war with echoes of the Cold War.
Well, you know, there too. We shouldn't forget that in the same week that the U.S. State Department was criticizing Putin for supporting Syria, they removed an embargo against Uzbekistan, where a very unattractive dictator had used his troops to butcher protesters a few years before. When it comes down to it, and we started with this, American foreign policy has this realistic element, and the Russians are perhaps beyond realistic. They're cynical, but all countries deal with leaders like Syria's Assad, who are guilty of serious crimes against their own people. I think the Russians have some concerns, which one may not share exactly, but which are legitimate, about what will happen in Syria after Assad falls. And I think most people believe that he will fall sometime fairly soon. But the country is ethnically divided, religiously divided, I should say, more than ethnically. Minority communities are very concerned that if the Sunnis dominate, there could be a very bloody civil war. So I think that the Russians are concerned about that and instability in the Middle East spreading, and Iran feeling even more under pressure if it loses its Syrian ally. And the Russians are alarmed seeing these repeated interventions by the U.S. or by NATO across the Middle East, in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya. They're cynical, but they don't see this as sort of a long string of humanitarian gestures. They see this as using the military force of the superpower to spread influence around the world.
Well, do you think, though, that just as Putin may feel the need to crack down at home, if he's losing his legitimacy, you don't think he's capable of any kind of foreign adventures?
He's capable. It's impossible to predict exactly what he'll do. Foreign adventures are certainly not going to help him at this point. And I think cracking down at home is going to be very difficult.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Daniel Treisman.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking to Daniel Treisman, a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles. He's a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia and a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's the author of two previous acclaimed books on Russia, and his latest is The Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Chris Scheid. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.